It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We look at the margin of profitability in agriculture and how high prices for crops, but also high input costs, affect Wisconsin farming operations. Net farm income is on track for a nearly 50-year high, according to estimates from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Join in on farming in these times, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Paul Mitchell is a professor at UW-Madison in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics, director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute. Paul, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
We saw the record 40-year high inflation in the broader economy last year. What has the past 12 months meant financially for farming operations?
It's been, from a financial perspective, a very good year. 2022 is projected, as you said, a record farm income. We haven't seen this in a long time. You correct for inflation, there's a little bit back in the 70s, it was the same. So this is a very good year.
I wonder, I mean, as you say there, the farm income could reach the highest level since 73, adjusted for inflation, of course, through the decades. What is driving the profit boom?
It's mostly been just higher prices. We've got nationally, we've had really good corn and soybean prices. Those are our major crops. We grow, a third of the world's corn, a third of the world's soybeans, and those have been exported a lot, and we've just been getting good prices. At the same time, livestock revenues are up. Dairy has had a really good year in terms of prices and revenue coming in. The same with cattle and broilers, chickens. It's the way farmers like to make money, from selling things at much higher prices than you cost relative to your cost of production.
Are there pockets, though? Are there winners in this, or are you seeing these effects across the board for farmers?
There's always variation, of course. Uh-huh. But yeah, I mean, fruits and nuts and vegetables, and some of those, cotton hasn't had, those crops have not had a stellar year relative to, as an aggregate group, relative to our major crops, corn and soybeans, and things like cattle and calves and dairy products, those and broilers. Those have been really good years, but those are also a large part of our ag economy in terms of dollars. And so the big chunks of our economy and the ag stock sector have had a really good year.
The USDA reports show that federal government checks accounted for nearly 40% of a farmer's income back in 2020. And since then, the rate of government payments issued has been declining. What has that meant for farm cash flow?
Essentially, we had record payments back there during the pandemic. There's a couple, and that has definitely increased their cash flow. And this is all at the typical or the average. There's always individuals varying around this. But with all that government money at the same time coming in as the prices for commodities started to recover, we had a tremendous amount of cash flow. It really, first thing farmers did is rebalance their balance sheets, get their mortgage payments paid down. We were on the edge of a farm crisis, to be frank, within margins and debt running up relative to income. And the first thing they did is rectify, get their whole financial situation under control. So we've seen a major improvement in the farm lending, rates of delinquency, farm bankruptcies are down. Then you move into things like, okay, now what do we do with this money after we've done some of that? We've seen, land purchases, we've seen machinery being repurchased, because like I said, we were on the verge of a crisis happening just before COVID was hitting. Then when COVID hit, so farmers have been enjoying the chance to recover some of these things they've avoided doing for a few years of having very low farm income.
That's what I was curious about. Like, in a more profitable year or a couple years in the farm business, where do operations put that money? Like, is it replacing equipment or buying land or paying down debt? What is a typical approach in a boom time?
Well, a lot of times you like to get your debt paid down so you can rebuild your equity and improve some of that so that when there bad times come, always, just like good times come, there's bad times too. And you got to get your situation prepared for that. We had those low interest rates at the same time as lots of cash. And so there was farmers taking on additional land purchases, lots of rebuilding, improvements to facilities. And then machinery. There was a shortage of machinery for a while there, because farmers were really excited about recovering some of these, reinvesting in machinery that they needed to get replaced or updated.
But I've been reading about how land prices are going up so much higher as well at the same time.
Yeah, that was part of it. And you had this lots of cash and a positive economic outlook. There was a lot of people looking to invest in farmland, not just farmers, but we've had, I think last year, the numbers show a 14% increase in the land values in Wisconsin, according to USDA, back in August. Federal Reserve Bank has good farmland up even more in the region. So yeah, we've had a good jump and that helps farmers' balance sheets as well, because now your equity's gone up.
Talking with Paul Mitchell about Wisconsin's farm economy and what he sees, professor in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. You can join in about your farm operations and how you're approaching these times. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Paul, how do farmers feel about the state of commodity prices? What do you hear out there?
Well, there's a lot of, I would say, they like high prices, obviously, but there's just a lot of worry about will these last? There's just so much market uncertainty with the war in Ukraine. What's going on with China in terms of this whole there's a lot of political instability, but with China, it's the their COVID response. Is it going to trigger now that they seem to have kind of gotten rid of the zero COVID policy and they had a lot of COVID hit? Is that going to slow down their economy? Because China is such a major player in terms of ag import, their imports are exports, and that it's just a concern if their economy slows down. And so they like high prices, but there's just a anxiety out there. And then between the will these prices hold, and then just the cost of all up and everything. And so they're anxious about these are great prices, but am I really making money? It's so hard to figure this out now because I seem to be paying so much for everything too.
The steep price increases that we've seen at the grocery store for our food costs. I wonder if growers are able to get more for their commodities, more for their livestock. I mean, is the money that we're paying so much more in groceries finding its way back to producers?
Well, on average across all your food products, the average is something like 17-18% of the food dollars for the farmer. Most of the cost of the food, what you're buying in the grocery store, is for everybody else along the supply chain. The farmer on average gets less than 20%. And there are certain, each items vary. Milk is, the more processing or people that touch the milk or whatever product you get at the market, the greater the farmer's share, but still. These higher prices for farmers, it's the food prices are part of it. Reverse that. The higher prices for food, some of that's for the farmers, but a lot of that's for the whole supply chain along there and all the extra labor costs and just the supply chain disruptions we've heard so much about.
UW-Madison ag economist Paul Mitchell with us on farm earnings in our state at a time when there's uncertainty in the broader economy. Cullen, about your crops, your livestock, your workforce, your balance sheets on the farm, informing your decisions on where to go next with your operations. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss farmers grappling with higher costs for feed, fertilizer, machinery, while commodity prices boom and our broader economy experiences 40-year high inflation. Bring your personal experience on farming and what your operation has done over the years to weather these ups and downs, these changes. 800-642-1234. We have farm economist Paul Mitchell, UW-Madison professor, stays with us. Paul, digging more into that USDA profit data, estimated dairy farms would see the largest growth in average net cash farm income in 2022. Why is dairy flush?
Well, you've stretched me there. I'm really a dairy economist, but there's just exports and getting some of these supply chains. It's always that's an important part of all these big commodities. We're a net exporter, and so the ability to move stuff overseas, export it, is what keeps the prices high. When something slows down exports, it tends to lower our prices at the farm gate here in the U.S. And so dairy has had I'm guessing, a good export market. I'm sure it's facing headwinds now as the dollar's gotten stronger, so that'll tend to slow down some of our dairy prices.
You mentioned just briefly bankruptcies. It wasn't too long ago where Western Wisconsin led the nation in farm bankruptcies. What are you seeing now?
I actually looked those numbers up again, and we're not number one anymore, which is a good figure not to be to be losing on. The farm bankruptcies, the Chapter 12 filings, those data are available online. And I looked this up. We have 10 in the state active over the last year. So that's a good sign. We're slowing down. It's been a long decline here. I'm not so sure how much some of that is the fact that the court system, some of the federal government, the Farm Service Agency that does have some ag lending, has sort of had a moratorium on farm bankruptcy filings. And so I think some of that might be more of a policy response than an actual financial response, but I'm thinking it's a mixture of both. Good prices for a lot of these commodities and slowing down of pushing some of these bankruptcies through the system up to the USDA's Farm Service Agency.
Let's take a call now. David in Cumberland is with us. David, hi. What is your situation?
Hi. We have about 70, 80 milk cows and the ranges for milk, and then we have about 150 to 250 sheep that my sister owns that we use for meat. And the price has been really good. But even that, the cost has been so high, especially finding labor. I have five guys who help me. I have an Amish guy who's in his 26, and then I have four others, but the youngest is 65.
The youngest is 65. So really, workforce challenges are an issue with you, David. What about the prices for milk and sheep? What are you seeing there?
The price is really high, but my input costs are about twice what they were 3 years ago.
Twice as they were. Okay. So what are the trade-offs there then, David? What do you have to do with your operations when you have tight labor issues, you've got all these input costs, but you are seeing higher prices on the sheep and the dairy?
They do help, but both my sister and I work off the farm because we both have degrees. My sister works at a dairy plant as a lab tech, and I work as a teacher. So I teach agriculture in the morning, all day long, and shop classes.
That is one busy day. David, thank you for sharing your situation. Paul, what do you see there? 70 to 80 milk cows, 150 to 250 sheep for meat, and multiple jobs going on.
That's right there is a very typical situation. So many farmers that are classified as farmers by USDA have other jobs as well. And it's just a reality of farming there's a lot of people that are, think of them as part-time or evening farmers, because it's a stabler income if you've got another outside source. It's a part of diversifying your portfolio. His size in terms of dairy is up well below average now. We've just crossed the average dairy herd in the state is over 200 cows now. And what I'd say, that's a very typical dairy farmer in terms of numbers.
What trends do you see as far as farmers retiring or passing the family business to relatives versus selling off land for developers?
Yeah, I'm looking at the data here. This is the national numbers, but 42% have off-farm jobs, and 18% of farms in the country are retirement farms. And so that right there shows you how typical that situation is. And so exactly, they are looking for ways to extricate themselves from the business, the day-to-day grind of farming, and moving into the retirement or having that other off-farm job just to protect themselves from the fluctuations in prices and income. So I think what we're seeing is this baby boomers are definitely moving out of farming, and it's always hard to, as people get older, they can't physically work as much, and finding labor, young people, we just have fewer of them, and agriculture for a lot of them is not the attractive business in terms of that day-to-day grind of being a farmer.
That's what I wonder. Do young people have the desire for this career path, but also the capital for the upstart costs of starting a farm operation if it's not, a family business that is being passed down to you, for instance?
Oh, definitely. You know, especially it was easier when the interest rates were low, but now we've got high interest rates. That's going to slow that entry into the industry from outside places. There are paths to it with, you know, apprenticeship programs, and there's special loan programs the USDA has for beginning farmers. But it's still, you start small. You got to grow a business. You can't, you know, you're not going to compete with the big operations for years. It just takes time and a lot of hard work.
Talking about Wisconsin's farm economy with UW-Madison's Paul Mitchell, professor in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. Join in on your farm operation, what you see in your farming community, 800-642-1234. David mentioned workforce, and the State Department of Workforce Development says Wisconsin is one of a few states with laws protecting migrant farm workers, and the department says the state employs 5,000 migrant workers yearly. How important are migrant workers to the agriculture farm equation and the industry here in Wisconsin?
They're very important for the dairy industry, but I got to get this clear. Dairy doesn't have migrants as much because they have, you know, full-time jobs that are permanent all year long. But a lot of our fruit and vegetables industry are they have seasonal demand. So like in the harvest time for potatoes, for example, or some of the fruit, the cranberries, another good example. And there's a lot of processing vegetables in the state. So having a migrant labor force to work either on the farms or in the food processing facilities, people may don't realize this, but we have the second largest processing vegetable industry, the industry that takes a raw vegetable and puts it in a can or freezes it. We're second after California. California's got a large tomato, making tomato sauce and paste. We have a large green beans, sweet corn, green peas, and a lot of those other vegetables that we put into cans or freeze, as well as a large fresh potato industry, making potato chips with them as well. And then just other fruits and vegetables that's so important, and it's seasonal demand. Hmm. Someone's got to move them around. Someone's got to work in the facility, and migrant labor is crucial for those industries.
When you talk with Wisconsin farmers, what reforms do they want to see happen to the farm workers visa program to help solve some of these workforce challenges?
I've never heard them say anything specific in terms of what legal changes, but it's always a continuing issue is labor demand, having people to do these jobs. They can't find people. And to be frank, I don't know how many of them really understand all these visa things and what an H-2A visa is and such. I do know in the dairy industry, I've got a former student that basically started, he's from a dairy operation, but he started a company that essentially goes to different places and recruits workers through family connections to his spouse. And so he's made a business, part of his business, out of bringing in ag labor from other places in the world. And I think that just gives you a sense of how big a demand there is. There's just so much need for farm labor, both migrant and non-migrant.
Before we have to let you go, I want to ask you about the farm bill. Pick your brain there as it's set to expire this year. The package of legislation covers so many different aspects of agricultural policies. What should we be watching for with the farm bill, and what economic factors might have an impact?
I think it's not going to be a revolutionary bill in the sense they're not going to roll out some really big new programs. In terms of commodity support anyway, there's not going to be a big change in the crop insurance or a big change in the subsidy programs, the dairy one and the ARC and PLC. These programs, they seem to be working. Farmers are generally happy with these programs. The big push the Biden administration has indicated, and I'm curious what Congress will think, has been towards conservation programs. They've been flat funded for years. Inflation Reduction Act passed this fall, and then the USDA started these climate smart partnerships for commodities. And those have poured billions of dollars into reinvigorating our traditional conservation programs. The commodity support, the climate smart ones are some new ideas. So I'm actually curious to see what Congress thinks. Are they going to continue this push towards conservation programs? Because we'll see. I tend to be in the middle. I don't worry, choose parties and such, but from an intellectual perspective, I'm very curious what this conservation stuff is going to do, because we've been flat funded, and you can see that in the environmental response variables like soil erosion. It's been flat. We haven't improved in a long time, and it's because we haven't paid for anything.
Paul, thank you for joining us in the analysis.
You're welcome.
Paul Mitchell is a professor at UW-Madison in the Department of Agricultural and Applied Economics. He's director of the Rank Agribusiness Institute. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.